Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
Thank you.
Wednesday evening, show number 1,553, I think. Not bad. Welcome to the Unfaced Special. As we do our thing here at Pro TV Radio and the Raw, I'm your host, Michael Lufingham, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to be in the house with you. Pro TV Radio and the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNews.com and the Assassin of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all, not some, not half, but all the good shit. So who, what, when, where, why, and how, right here, right now, at www.basnnewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brotherman Network who will be chiming in as they come in. Radio Reggie in Richmond, Virginia. The Orlando Ledbetter in Philadelphia. Pat Freeman, the Mighty Oba in Western New York, doing what Oba do. Fred Widdett, the professor at North Kakalaki. And as always, riding shotgun with me, the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. What up, G?
When you poke the bear will smack you outside the head.
Wow. Okay, so which bear got poked?
The Golden State Warrior bear got poked.
Uh-huh. And what happened?
Michael, I'm telling you, the Memphis Grizzlies made the Golden State Warriors really mad yesterday.
What'd they do?
When a player goes up for a layup, you do not, you never.
Never?
Undercut a player. Never.
Okay, you never undercut, yes. Mm-hmm.
Last night, Gary Payton the third.
Yep.
Went out for a layup.
Mm-hmm.
He got smacked upside the head. Landed on his elbow.
Wow.
And broke it in two places.
Whoa. Sis?
Seriously.
Holy mackerel.
And the next play, Draymond Green gets elbowed in the eye and bleeding over the floor.
Oh, on court justice.
Michael, it's okay to play rough. It's okay to play tough.
True.
It's not okay to play dirty. And last night, the first quarter of that game, the Memphis Grizzlies played dirty.
Okay, so what happened the rest of the game?
Well, the Grizzlies got a 25-point lead, and the Warriors came back almost beat them. Which tell me one thing, Mike.
Yep.
Grizzlies cannot beat the Warriors. I don't care what they do.
Okay, and I can roll with that.
And the NBA, the NBA guys do something about it because you cannot have people undercutting. You can't do that.
Well, you know the playoffs are a whole other animal. And the fact that it went the way it did in the first quarter, that's all on the refs. The refs have to lock that up and tighten
that's
it up.
That's right.
And tighten up from the jump street. If they didn't do that, that's where the game deteriorates. Did they take care of that right off the very start?
Well, they threw out both players who did that.
Okay.
But here's the thing, Michael. When you hurt somebody and can't come back for the game, Gary Payton the second was the only player that could corral John Morant.
Yeah.
Now Nobody.
You know, the more you talk about him and the more his, I won't say legend, but his pedigree has grown, I think a lot of people are saying that, Gary. You know, a lot of people, I won't say fear, but they respect this guy. So did he just come out of nowhere, or did he do this, and has he been doing this for a while?
Last year, I wanted to get I knew he was going to be a good player.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me at all if he's doing this year. But what you cannot have people do what they did last night.
Okay. So we know in the playoffs, there are also exceptions made for certain players. We heard of the Jordan rules. Some people may even think there's a LeBron rules.
Yep.
Is this kid, Morant, good enough to create his own rules?
He hasn't been in the league long enough.
That's the explanation? He hasn't been in the league long enough?
Well, that's what I'm saying. He hasn't been in the league long enough.
I know, but you know what? We've heard this before, that you can't get that call yet, or you haven't been here long enough. It's like, well, wait a minute. If the move was so definitive, or if his play was so defined that he warranted getting the benefit of the doubt, why not give it to him?
Everybody knows we have rookies. And rookies have to earn their keep, right?
Right.
That's the rule of the rules of the game. The earn their keep.
Yes.
Now, I don't know about you, but Ja has not earned his keep yet.
Is he good? Yes.
Is he a superstar? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Does he get rules? No, not yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. It to me, it's like, all right, listen. We saw this guy coming up. We saw him play. And all of a sudden, we realized he's got some talent. I mean, more than just average talent. It's bordering on downright exceptional. So, why are you going to make him earn it if he has already earned the benefit of the doubt by his skill alone? This is the question that I think every referee runs into.
Look, I'm not hating on the brother. I think he's a great player.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's an outstanding talent. But last night, and playing in Memphis, Tennessee, too, last night was ridiculous. And what I mean is, look, I'm a New York Knicks fan, and my second team is the Golden State Warriors. And my second team.
Okay.
I may be a little biased here, too. But what I saw last night was inexcusable. Inexcusable because you don't go into a game losing one of your players. You don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We had a couple of days ago with Joel Embiid. You don't do that. You got a 20-point lead. You pull out of the game. What's wrong with you?
Well, we may both agree on that, but that's not necessarily so. And we know we've seen leads blown before. We've seen teams lose momentum before. That's part of a coach's responsibility, Gary, to know when to take players in and out Got the flow
I'll tell
to
you what, Mike. I'll tell you this.
What?
If the Sixers lose, if the Sixers lose this playoffs, he can lose his job.
Well, if the Sixers lose, after everything they've been through, he deserves to lose his job. Now, they've tried for years. They've tried for years. And
yes.
I thought when Doc came there, that would be the missing piece to the puzzle. Doc,
yeah, I did too.
Bring,
I did too.
He would bring stability. He has a calm head.
Yep.
He knows how to motivate players. I thought
yep.
this solves the problem. Well, apparently, it does not. They barely got by out of the first series. And
yep.
now... they're in jeopardy of losing a possible second.
Yep.
That's not what Dr. signed on for.
And people, don't get me wrong. I like Dr. Ellis too, but you gotta make some decisions. You gotta say, okay, we got 24 leads. Let me take them out and see what happens. Bring
him
back in again.
Well, let's look for a balanced hit on this. Let me see. We got Tony here in the mix, and I know Tony likes Ja Morant. So Tony, get in there. Can you hear me?
Yep, I hear you. What's up?
Okay, so we were talking about Ja Morant, and I know his star is on the rise, and we talked about how young players are getting but grudgingly instead of like, this guy is a true talent, just give him the benefit of the doubt. It's like they have to earn everything. How do you see this thing with Morant and what happened with Golden State?
In regards to Mr. Green and all that other stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I think there was a bugging, outright raw buggy the first quarter of that game.
Well, you know, first of all, with Morant, when him and RJ Barrett were, you know, going to be the, I wanted the Knicks to get Morant. I mean, I know it sounds, you know, of course it sounds whatever now, and
mm-hmm.
no disrespect to RJ, but my thing was going to be, you know what, whoever they wind up getting, I'll embrace. If it's Barnett, fine. If it's Morant, that's good. But I definitely wanted to get Morant because I just saw the way how explosive he was at Murray State.
He's good. He's a good player.
He's a tremendous player. I think he's, I, you know, and we get a lot of anointings of players, but I think he's the next genuine article. You know, this and
that's what I'm getting at. Is he the genuine article?
I agree with that.
Absolutely no doubt in my mind. I think, let's put it this way. If he wasn't playing in Memphis, I think there'd be a few more people that would know of him. But with that being said, Sunday for a lot of people was a coming out, somewhat of a coming out party for him. In regards to the whole overall series, first of all, Draymond, the act's getting old. The act's getting real old, bruh. And you see, he's fallen into that Dennis Rodman thing now where he's using the whole, well, it's my reputation. Bruh,
mm-hmm.
if it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck, it's not a fucking rhino. It's not a rhino. I mean,
I agree with you, but Draymond Green, as soon as he walks on the floor, referees look at him
with cross-eyed. You know what? And I agree with you, but see, he also perpetuates that himself as well. I'll say it like this. You can't be Dirty Harry 1 minute and then want to be Barney Fife the next. You got to be true to who you
are. Okay.
Let me finish. The thing is, I get it that, you know, he has the reputation, whatever, but see, he also perpetuates that, number one. There was a thing before the whole incident where he basically jaws with Morant. And look, trash talking's a part of the game and all the other stuff. I get that. I don't get bent all out of shape with that. But cause and effect, when you perpetrate a certain way and people react to you that a certain way, don't all of a sudden come off as being surprised. For him right. to try to come off as so surprised, it's not like this is his fourth or fifth year in the league. You know? He's a vested veteran. He's got championship caliber rings. He probably cost himself on one ring years ago by playing Nutsy with the guy in the finals, and it probably cost them winning. It cost them with a four-peat as opposed to winning 3-4.
Yes.
Yeah, but that being said, and again, you saw how he reacted. He said it was a reputation, and then he comes out yesterday saying, "Hey, I'm gonna still be feisty." Okay, good, be feisty, but know what goes with that. And please, 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 and let me ask James Brown and the Famous Flames to say please again, because if you give a dance, you've got to pay the band. If you're gonna play up into that whole persona, you have to take the sugar with the shit. Now, personally, I was surprised that he got ejected, but then after looking at the call, because again, he rakes the guy on the face and then he drags him down by his uniform. I mean, come on.
But,
was that necessary?
The Famous Burroughs or whatever his name is.
Was that worthy of being thrown out of the game?
Yes.
Not necessary. Was that worthy of being? See, you're saying, see, you know, no disrespect,
you
but you're saying,
you
you're saying that, you're saying that, Gary, you're saying that as a fan, as a Dubs fan. I got to be real. I got to call you out on that. You're saying that as a Dubs fan.
As a basketball fan, you can't injure somebody, man.
If you can't, but and Draymond wasn't trying, and Draymond didn't injure somebody too. I'm not trying to play the two wrongs don't make a right. But see, here's the thing. Draymond knows better. Draymond's been down. This is not. See. He wants to try to make it out like this is all, like, you know, this is all new territory. Look, we all know every NBA player thinks he's never committed a foul in his adult life.
Sure.
You know, that's been going on for years. But see, the thing with Draymond, and again, I respect Draymond as a great player, but when you go out of your way to go to the other side and then actually pitch a bitch about the way you're treated, I'm sorry, you get no love at all from me. And see, the interesting thing about this series is the Warriors are looking into a mirror, because in many ways, even though they don't have the reputation yet, that's them when they were on the rise, trying to get that respect, trying to whatever. And that's the thing. Now, the fact that they evened it up last night is no surprise. This is going to, you know, this may be harder than all the championships, because the thing is, look, I'm not saying they're on borrowed time, but let's face it. They've only got maybe they've mixed the team up real nice with youth and experience. But as we all know, you get that 4 to 5 year window to win in the NBA. And if you don't take care of that 4 to 5 year window, you either become the Utah Jazz or you become the old LA Clippers. Now they're not going to, now they are, or either the dreaded just good enough to get knocked out in the first round. Now we know that they're not that. We know that they're not that. And with their championship pedigree, they're an elite team. They are still an elite team. But as it, you know, and again, this is the unforgiving part about the NBA, because when your number is up, it's, you know, it, you may go kicking and scratching, but You may, you know, whatever. This was, put it this way. I would implore folks, even folks who, quote unquote, can't stand the NBA, if you're going to watch one series, this would be the series to watch. This is the one series worth staying up a little bit extra on those nights when you can to watch, strictly because of the star power. Like I said, I feel like Morant is the next guy, is the next one. And
can I ask you a question here?
Sure.
The Golden State Warriors, I watched them for about 35 years now. And one thing I do notice about this organization is that this team runs hot and cold. I mean, last night they were Golden Knights.
Sure, well, yeah, a lot, you know. And you're going to go
to it. It went 7 for 35 on 3-on-3.
Gary, that's what happens with jump shooting teams. Come on,
exactly. It's going to, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword. And see, it's probably a higher probability now because, again, let's put it this way. They are more than contenders, but they have, let's put it this way, unlike those championship years, they've got some flaws to them. They have some flaws to them, and people are going to look, again, a lot of what's going on with them, while the physical is there, the mental is there, too. And see, especially this time of the year, it's almost hard to say which is tougher, the mental part or the physical part, because... Because when they see them Grizzlies, they see themselves. If they're being true to themselves, they see themselves. And that's why they know we got to bring a lunch every night. Now they're going back to Oakland. But see, here's what Memphis is saying. Y'all stole one from us. We're going to do our damnedest. And what's the one thing we always say, Gar? The series doesn't start till the home team loses. So we're already knee deep. Two games in.
I went to Chase Center today. That's one of the most beautiful arenas I've ever seen. But you know what? You know what the lowest ticket that price is? $160.
That's why it's beautiful.
Is this before you've parked your car or hey, it's the playoffs. It's the playoffs.
Only if you can pay it.
That's right. We got Fred Winnett with us, the professor. And, you know, Tony brought up a good idea because oftentimes when a collection of athletes get together and they start talking about how great they'll be, and that they have X number of years to do things. And by the way, our horse expert, Jennifer Thibodeau Bork, my little sis, will be here in a few minutes to talk about the Derby.
Thank you for going on Saturday. Good job on Saturday.
Okay, so Fred, let me throw this at you. You know, you lead the Steeler pedigree. You had them 4 or 5 years at the very, very top of their game, doing what they did. Did you ever think at any point it'd be like, well, you know, now they're on the downside, you know, are they doing a good job of reloading, or have they been around too long? Are they long in the tooth? Good evening, and how do you feel about that?
Well, one of the problems that they're facing in the NFL, most teams when they're facing this is that simply the NFL has a built-in failure unless you are the most meticulous and most fortunate organization. And as we have said before, on a number of occasions, it appears some people, well, recently this past year, a lot of the organizations are more about collecting their TV money than they are about playing to win. Exhibit A, Detroit. Exhibit B, until very recently, Cleveland. You just going down the list. Some of these teams don't look like they were willing to do what it took to win. And most of them have not built a lot. Several of them have built a culture of winning that almost defies logic when it comes to winning and losing. Some of them find a way to win. Some of them are still trying to figure it out. Why are we here? And unfortunately, some of their why are you here look like, hey, where's the money?
Mm-hmm.
And by virtue of that, you will see that they continue to lose and lose and lose. And, you can watch certain games. You know, at some point they're going to rise up. I'll give you the best case scenario I can give you is that last Super Bowl four. Okay, if you know their system, offensively and defensively, and then you hear them talk, they only played on average a quarter and a half. So they built the defense that kept them from just flat out getting run over.
Right.
And then after that, what do they do? They would go out and say, offensively, we're gonna run trap left, half back, full back to the right, back to the left, back to the right, roll to the left, roll to the right. If we have to throw a pass, we throw it to a pass. You had by that time you had Cunningham as quote the other tight end who was like a leather lineman. But even with all the things they did, and remember, several of the stars of that team, nothing sickens me more than to sit and listen to a game, and they're telling a source of he was this draft choice out of this school, draft choice out of that school. Okay, let's go with the front four: Arkansas A&M, North Texas State, Texas Southern. And this is when neither one of those schools was a Division II because it was a Division I school. Don't forget that. Then you had one of the white guys that played up front. The only one from a large school that I could think of was 78. And then the two white guys were from nondescript school. They all everything middle linebacker. Where was he from? Oh, he was from Kent State. He was recruited as a backup quarterback. He only weighed 214 pounds. You had the Russell was kind of a pedigree linebacker.
Right. He was an able safety, the linebacker. But yes, the issue isn't what they had. How were they able to get it together and collectively use their talent to force the issue talent-wise where they had years of success and that they knew that in order to maintain that success, they had to get rid of A or add B or whatever and maintain it as opposed to just blowing it up.
Well, no, they took the approach. Okay, we've been dipping in the same pool everybody else been dipping in. Some of these guys the whole entitlement thing was already there. You had that with a lot of these teams, and then and because you had guys who felt that who looked and felt like they can play like they were entitled. What do? They expected to win without going out and winning. If you get what I'm saying. They thought that they were just supposed to line it up. Because, you know, you listen to old guys talk about going to play the Steelers. Some of them were more afraid of contact with a Steelers fan than a Steelers player.
Yeah. No, that's true. But that window of time where a group of athletes says, this is us. We can do this. And it may have manifested in a championship or even two championships. But when do you know, especially if you're trying to earn one, that I got these guys and they can get it done, but I only have this amount of time in which to do it? How much percentage-wise do you think it's the players themselves self-imposing the pressure on themselves or the coaching staff, or the front office, or the inability to find the right people to motivate them?
Well, one of the things you have to be careful of goes back to the front office, okay? Prior to, I'll say, 83, I think, was the last real Steeler year. And by this time, one of the things that the Rooneys developed that everybody have a hard time understanding, because he developed a family there. And when you listen to these guys talk, one wouldn't leave because the other one was there, and I'm not going to leave my buddy or my brother there by himself. I'm not going to pull my back on my brother. It sounds crazy, but at the same time, it was real. And, if Bradshaw had not gotten hurt, and I want to say it was 82 or 83, but he didn't play hardly. He played hurt and then got benched. But then when he came back, he played a little bit before, okay, this is over. And because of that, what you ended up with was – a quarterback who couldn't run anymore, who couldn't throw accurately anymore. By that time, Swan was gone. Starwood was still there with Bubby, but most of the old heads, matter of fact, Lambert had cut out. They had the backup linebackers were starting by this time.
Right.
And that Gert Winston was gone. He was a player anywhere, linebacker for him. But that camaraderie, the gel that held them together, was gone.
Yes.
And after that year, all the Hall of Famers were gone except for Starwood. Starwood and guy from South Carolina State. And it was what, 2 or 3 years before the Steelers came. Oh, Mike Webster played until 86 or 7, which he really should not have done.
But let me explain it this way. Tony, you had to compete with them because you were Oilers man, and you had a similar collection of talent in Houston. A lot of these guys were just as good. In some cases, a couple of them might have been even better. However, in that same time frame, you had to deal with the fact that you had to run into Pittsburgh. And I'm only using this to compile the mindset behind when does somebody say, all right, we got to pull the plug on it, or let's go with this next year. Let's pick up a guy or two here, and we'll stick with these guys. What maintains and what cuts it all loose? Tony, are you there?
Tony?
Mike, something to look at there, again, goes back not to the players themselves, because, you know, everybody's still a superstar even long after they eat no more. And
right.
part of that came down this way. You had administration in the various teams. Some of these people, you wonder how did they get their millions, as did they wonder how some of these people got to be billionaires when some of their decisions are just spread out so stupid. Well, it happens because they were good at one thing, you know. There were not a lot of people out there who could play football, basketball, and baseball. You had to finally choose one. You look at the administration, there's somebody like a Deion Sanders. He was good at baseball. He was good at football. But put him on the basketball court. He's still a great athlete, but he's out of his environment. And some of these people, with like the Oilers, you know where the Houston Oilers, so we know where their dollars came from, the oil business.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these people, they were good they were great at what they did if it was for no other reason than they actually went out and say, build here, crush your team in, dollars rolled in, and they built a big house with a rodeo ring in the backyard and that kind of stuff. But then you take them and put them out there with football. Now, somehow or another, they went out and did. And remember, Houston was one of the old AFL teams. Most of them were brighter than the people who were holdovers from the old NFL.
Right.
Some of them, eventually, some of them got bought out or sold out or whatever. But you know, a lot of what they did early on was, in some cases, was good. And then there are also those Buffaloes and a few others who ain't never done much of nothing. You know, they did. You know, Buffalo managed to go to the Super Bowl, where the only ring they got, you know, four times was the ring around the collar.
Exactly. So they had to, for those 4 years that they made it to the big game, maintain what they had. They really didn't do anything as far as adding somebody here or adding this one component that made them stronger. They pretty much went with the same crew. That's what I'm trying to get at, guys. You know, Buffalo tried it for four times in a row, and it didn't work. They must have thought something was within what they had that thought, you know, we can get it done with this crew. And they didn't. And no matter what NFL film says about it, they have zero chips to show for it. So they couldn't have been that good. Who made the decision that, okay, we can win with these guys? That's the question.
Well, in most cases, there was at least what I'll call an educated guess. I'm not sure. Something recently came out about a statement that some administrator, somebody in a professional or college organization were making comments about players, okay? And the one that you bring up on occasion is about how one of the interviewers, one of the team representatives, asked this guy was his mom about his mama being a hoe and all this kind of stuff. Well, those kind of things happen, but quality front office material, you don't get that. And there's just certain things, you know, like I've said before, there's some things that I would like to line the Ronies up and stuff the hell out of them about, just because they bought into some of the same stuff the rest of the league did. Having said that, we can still look back and say, okay, even to, the kid that played linebacker, basically got his neck broke. You know, he just came off of the payroll. I think at the end of the year.
Garner, Rutgers, right? Rutgers.
I forget his name, but he was on their payroll.
Garner Rutgers.
He was a player. You know, he couldn't afford insurance.
Yeah.
Because of his neck injury. So they kept him as part of their organization. And there's other instances like that within the family, so to speak, that they have done over the years.
They rebuilt his house. He got a brand new house.
In New Jersey. And you know, when you see some of these teams when they have these reunions and stuff, you don't hear about situations like Matt Schnell telling people from the Jets go to hell or worse. As my mother used to say, some people know how to act in public and some people don't. And you're going to be one of the ones who knows how, because I'm going to tell you how. And if you don't, I'm going to make you wish you had done what I told you. Well, you look at some of these teams and you see, it's easy to come back when you got four Super Bowl rings, or, you know, in the later years, you got one here, one there, you know, but some of these things, the environment is still good, and they never really won much of anything. And you find that not only at the professional level, but you find that I look down the street at Fayetteville State sometimes, and there's some kids that I worked their games when they were in school. I mean, in one of those years, these guys were like 1-8, 1-9-1. That bunch of guys, you can call one and you see a whole rundown of the whole team. That's how close they are. And this is roughly 30 years later. Something that Coach Fulham did to them guys when a coach died of lung cancer, they basically adopted his kids. Anything you need, anything you want, just call one of us. We got you. And see, that's when, and that was when they had a jacked up chancellor, and who literally thought that there was no need for athletics, especially at a black school, and if you're taking up that much of your budget. And then, you know, and come to find out, you know, he actually graduated from Air Force Academy.
If we look at success of a group, it's the question of what makes a guy say, we got these guys, they can do it. And what makes a guy say, all right, scrap these guys, they ain't having it. And I'm not talking about flat out winning and losing. I'm talking about being successful and sticking with a group that's successful, and maybe sticking with a group that
hangs on a little too long, and they just can't do it. What's the difference?
Typically, you want to find a level of continuity within the framework of your organization. You're going to find
sure.
that your people, no matter how, you know, if you're watching a team, you know, you don't have the grumbling, you don't have the coach is stupid, you don't have, and literally it starts at the team. You have a situation
yep.
where people
mm-hmm.
who have enough people in place who are going to say, okay, at the end of the day, no matter win or lose, I'm going to make sure that I have done my part. I have made you guys next to me better. And in some cases, you see, when I coach football, I coach for the military. And them cats are cut from a totally different cloth than John Q. Public. I mean, you had a guy that went on to play for University of Illinois. You had a guy that played for Jackson State. You had a couple that played at Federal State and several mm-hmm. other schools.
Mm-hmm.
And they were living that much better. And then there were some guys on the team who were better than them. But because they had families, they couldn't just cut and run out of the military. And one of them, you know, the best kid we had was a punter who had violated whatever school he was going to, he violated some rule. And so basically he ended up joining the Army, and he actually died in a car wreck
mm-hmm.
during the Christmas holiday before, because he was being heavily recruited by several schools. But, you know,
okay.
I remember when we went to Scott, at that point I had never been to a military, what do they call them? It's like a military funeral. Okay. I had never been to one. There's a formula they go by, and, you know, to get all this stuff done. And
yeah.
at a certain point, the last roll call.
Mm.
And they call three people out, and it's like, here first sergeant, or here's sergeant major, whatever it was at the time. And then they call his name. And you saw these guys broke down. Two of these guys broke down and cried. I run into some of these cats now, and that was back in 80 to 83. Okay. I run into some of these guys who've gone on and retired and still live here. And, you know, it amazes me sometimes that we actually put together a winning program until the general change in the new general thought it was a waste, and although he wanted to have an 82nd only program and not a Fort Bragg program, but then, you know, he got busted
okay.
or something anyway. But he became that person who poisoned the water, so to speak, because the guy before him, you know, he looked after us to the point where he actually because of the reaction of one of the company commanders, he actually ruined his career for trying to undercut the football team while
okay.
the rest of his unit was jacked up.
Having said that, this come back to that because our Kentucky Derby guest is here. Y'all know her. She is a proud Cajun. Member of the A-Bear Clan, my little sister Jennifer Thibodeau Bork. Jenny, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I sure can.
All right, how you doing, darling?
Oh, we're doing good. A belly full of fried honey shrimp with a nice medium stick on the side. Yeah, I'm doing great.
There you go.
So it's the first Saturday in May, and y'all know what that normally means. We get back down to Kentucky, 20 horses, all kinds of chaos. And I think in this particular one, and we always talk about a big race, but the potential for a big payout is sitting pretty because they got two or three trainers with multiple horses in there that I think might try to create their own traffic jam. How do you see this?
Let's see. Fletcher's got three. Cox has three. And there's another one. I can't remember his name. He has two. So there's a total of what? Eight horses. That if they band together, they could really block in and box in competitors if the jockeys play it smart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would that be the, you know, the cool thing to do? No. No, that's a dirty pool right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely a dirty pool. But it would sure be tempting to try it. You know,
that's almost true.
Have to be a fool to not try it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm interested in is how many bloodlines are in common with the number of these horses. Because we were talking about that earlier.
It's like when it comes to thoroughbred horses, it's not like Maury. Everybody knows whose mama and daddy they are. Sometimes you know by the name of the horse.
Yep.
As little as mama and daddy is. But the point is, they're all coming from pretty much the same family.
Yeah, especially further back because there's a couple of them. AP Secret. Mm-hmm. That's a no-brainer. That's APN.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got the Tis the Bomb. That's also APN.
Mm-hmm.
Which also produced Tappet. So anything with Tis and Tappet and AP, that's all same bloodline. The one that kind of threw me off a little bit, where is he? Oh, what's his name?
Is that Epicenter?
No. It was a different one that turned out. I can't remember.
Was that the filly?
No. It was Border or something Border.
Yes.
That's also, if I'm not mistaken, that was also a Tappet horse, an APE.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That might be 7 Tappet horses in off of 18 Indy that carry almost those same bloodlines. They all go back to AP Indy and Tappet, if I'm not mistaken.
Do you think somebody's sitting down looking at
even
the race?
Even a bit more interesting.
Do you think somebody's looking at the race and form would just say, let me go with all the AP Indy horses? Mm-hmm. Barbara Road. Do you think that looking at all the horses with one particular, well, Gary, you had Jenny on Saturday. What did you learn from the race or the potential of the race that you didn't know before?
Well, I learned about bloodlines. I really understand how bloodlines run now. Thank you for telling me that.
Oh, you're most welcome. And yes, Barbara Road is a Tappet, which is off of AP Indy. So yeah, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And where's the other one? I know I'm missing one. That's at least 6. Let's see.
So theoretically, you could take those 6
seven
horses.
We've got seven AP Indy horses out of
wow.
10. Holy smokes. This
mm-hmm.
is going to be interesting. This is going to be very interesting.
Well, that's a third of the field right there. So that really
yeah.
is saying something.
And Barbara now, Road is going off at 30-1 currently.
Mm-hmm.
So if he comes in, that's going to be a hefty little payout.
Mm-hmm.
'Tis the bomb's going off at 30-1. Charges going off at 20-1.
What happens? They get 1, 2, and 3. They get 1, 2, and 3. The same owner.
The payout is going to be huge.
That's called the trifecta.
Because anything in the top three is, that's a pretty penny. That's a good payout. Anything in the top three. Now, to be fair, even though you don't really win any money at for any other showing or placing, you still have breeding cred because your horse ran in that derby. They qualified. That does mean they have quality. Now, obviously, nowhere near as much as the winners do. Nowhere near. But just like with humans, you can have the best athlete possible, and they have a bad dose. It's you know, one of the parts that you can't account for ahead of time because you just never know. Anybody, anything can have a bad day. In spite of, you know, you can come in completely undefeated, you know, huge length, the whole nine yards. Come in, run the Derby, run the Preakness, and just bomb out of the Belmont. Or the opposite. Bomb out the first two and smoke them on the last. Because even a bad horse can win on a good day sometimes. It just all depends. Because there's always that little bit of chance. And it's to me, it's more knowing your old bloodlines, knowing what works together, watching the training, see how they perform, and then taking an educated guess and hoping that you're right.
Jenny, in this race,
every once in a while, we hit it.
In this race, you got three trainers with multiple horses, like you said. But there's one big trainer that's missing from the mix, and that's Bob Baffert. Baffert,
yes, indeed,
had a direct impact on the last three Kentucky Derbies, and we know he can't run in this one because he's been, well, X'd out of the equation. What is it like knowing that one of the arguably best trainers can't compete because he may be riding dirty?
I'm sure the other trainers right now are breathing a huge sigh of relief. There's not as much stress. Because one factor that they were already up against has been removed. So now they're up against a smaller field automatically. When Baffert goes in, that's a given. And he's usually got at least two horses in, if not more. And here lately, Baffert wins. He's got the ability to get the best of the best, and he's hard to beat. He's tough to beat. Even when there's no funny business going on, he's a tough competitor. But without him there, that opens up for Pletcher, Cox, and all the others, and even some of the unknowns that are coming up. It opens it up. It gives them a chance. So with it's going to be an interesting run.
We got 20 horses in the race as in past year. Again, it's a lot of horses. And sometimes it's the post position that makes the difference. At Churchill Downs, it seems like the sweet spot is between the 5 and the 9. You know, we had American, we had Justify as a 7 horse win the Triple Crown. We had American Pharoah, also in between that area, do the same. I mean, it may be the lucky draw to get a nice post. But what does that say about the configuration of the track if you're a jockey?
Dude, if you pull anything into that auxiliary gate, your chances are not good. The further out you get, the worse your shot is. Period.
Exactly.
You just got too much ground to cover. Way too much. And that track is way, for the amount of ground that they lose, that track is too short to make it up. So in all honesty, I don't see anything really past the 14th hole really doing much of anything besides maybe middle of the pack towards the end at best.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Barbara Rowe being in the 14th slot, I can see that that's a legitimate long shot. That is a legitimate long shot, but still a shot. But the rest, you know, Tis the Bomb, Charge It, Epicenter. Mm-hmm. Epicenter grabs third post. Then you've got Charge It in the 8th slot, Tis the Bomb mm-hmm. in the 9th,
mm-hmm.
and then Barbara Road in the 14th.
I like them all. I like them all.
Yep.
I just can't take my chances with that. And you mentioned AP Indy and all the horses that go with it. Now, tell everybody why AP Indy is such an effective horse from a breeding standpoint.
Because that boy, matter of fact, hold on, let me pull him up one more time. That way I have it in front of me. Because AP Indy is Seattle Sloop.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much top and bottom for the sire line. Because even on the dam line on that side, that's Nijinsky, which is a Seattle Slew son.
Yes.
And that ended up producing Unbridled.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then when you come down to the broodmare side, you know, to the dam side of it, you know, on the race day line. Let's see. It's very similar. You know, relative unknowns, not, you know, really, really great horses. You know, nothing to write home about, but not bad either. And then you get onto the dam side of Barbara Road.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's Hail to Reason, Southern Image. Let's see. Oh, and these are some older lines. But Northern Dancer as well is in there to come on down to Barbara Road. So, while it's a long shot, he's got the blood to do it. Now, let's bring him in a little bit further. Oh yeah, because especially once you get on the broodmare side,
mm-hmm.
because AP Indy's dam is a secretariat broodmare. That's
there
a secretariat daughter. That's his
mm-hmm.
daughter. First generation daughter. Not granddaughter, great-granddaughter. That was his daughter.
See, all in the family.
And they thought he was a flop. His daughter produced colts that ran. Like AP Indy.
Great
point. Because that's something royal coming up and showing through.
Yes, indeed. I'll leave this to the panel. Is anybody else here? Tony, you have a question for Jenny on the Kentucky Derby?
Well, I know when we talked on Saturday, I had asked about the weather conditions. Do we have a more of an update on it now?
Looks like it's still holding about the same.
Okay.
Nothing drastic has changed from what I'm seeing. Now let's see
mm-hmm.
what's going on.
Professor, do you have any questions for Jenny?
No. Matter of fact, I won't be able to watch. I have a commitment with Saturday.
Hold on.
Jenny, what happens when a horse goes over a lane? What do they do?
Wait, say that again?
When a horse goes over to another
horse.
Goes over the rail? What happens to that horse? When they cross over a blocky horse, what do they do?
You're talking about when one horse cuts off another horse?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Depending on what exactly happened. Because that's like that one race where that happened last year. What was it last year that they got disqualified for that?
Two years ago.
Okay, there you go. Okay. It has to be a clear interference and connection where it could have really caused some serious harm for them to get disqualified like what happened. That call was spot on.
Okay.
They made the right call because what that jockey did, intentional or not, what he did could have gotten somebody killed.
That's why I asked the question.
I mean, you're talking about going 45 miles an hour with no panic. And we're talking about 12, 13, 1,400-pound animals slamming into each other. A little 100-pound jockey doesn't stand a snowball's chance in hell if they come off in that kind of a mix-up. That would be, it would be 10 times of ugly. And that's why they pulled that. That's why they disqualified him. That's why. And it's to teach a lesson that hopefully they won't make that mistake again in the future. Because now, did that make a bit of a mess at the betting windows? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it did. But at the end of the day, safety has to be paramount for the jockeys, for the horses. I mean, yes, a horse is an animal, but that is still a living being that is worthy of respect because it's half of that team. Actually, that's three-quarters of the team right there. Because the jockey's on steering and guiding and egging on. That's about it. You know, that's what that part is. So, yeah, they did it right. But now, if it's real, real minor and it's not real clear that it interfered with other horses being able to you know, make the clearance and end up placing, then they won't do anything. They'll let it go. Mm-hmm. And that was a clear example of when it's like that, they will pull you. They will disqualify you. And that's why, because it was a clear connection.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And that DQ cost the winner $1 million at least. And God knows how much in breeding money.
That's just in prize. That's just in the purse. That doesn't include all of the endorsements, all of the breeding rights, syndication, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was $1 million in that split second, and everything else that goes with it evaporated. The prestige, the bragging rights, all of it blew right away. Just it flew right out the window. You can watch those little chickens fly the coop. Whoop, bye bye. There's no getting it.
Oh shit!
All you got
so
is a handful of tail feathers.
Jenny, if we're talking about all the AP in these kids here, run off the names of the horses and the numbers. I know we got
okay,
number three.
Okay, hang on.
Epicenter.
I am seeing something. I've looked at three different websites. And they're showing a different setup of who's running.
Yeah, I got 28 horses.
No, they're not 28. They have 20 horses, and anybody who got scratched, they scratched them out and they added them more. So there can't be any more than 20.
Okay, let me see what I can pull.
Mm-hmm.
See if we can find a definitive, not just contenders, actual.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Because even between now and then, even up to race day, it could still change.
Tony,
there's always going to be the chance that somebody's going to scratch.
Tony, I don't know if you're still working the window up there, but we know it's always congested on Derby day. Is there a basic mistake that all Derby veterans make when they come to the window, or are they pretty much all pros now?
Unfortunately, you are always going to have somebody frantic. You know, if the race goes off, say at 6:39, invariably you're going to have a bunch of morons that at 6:38:55 that are going to be like, "Can you get it in for me?" It's like, and again. The first Saturday in May, everybody, and even if you're not a horse racing fan, You know the first Saturday in May is Kentucky Derby Day.
Yeah,
may
the
not,
day before
you know,
Mother's Day.
Yeah, or it's one or the other. It's all, let's put it this way, it doesn't sneak up on you.
No.
It doesn't sneak up on you unless you're just not paying attention, in a sense. But no, it's look, your old longtime bettors, they're probably going to get theirs, you know, they're going to, put it this way, the bets that they want to get in, they're going to get it in time, even if you have scratches leading up to the race. And whatever. And because, see, that's why I always ask about the weather, because that's a huge factor. Because the difference between a fast track and a muddy track is as you like to say, goo gobs of money. And
that's right,
you know, if I've learned anything in those years, it's that, you know, 70 degrees and sunny as opposed to 50 degrees and rainy,
Oh, yeah, because a lot of these horses like dry, fast tracks.
There you go.
And they'll end up on a muddy track, and they don't know what to do.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. And then you've always got that one little freak horse that's never run on a sloppy track before, and that sucker just goes muddy.
Yeah.
And rooster tails on everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They make it interesting.
Well, it's you know, it's kind of sad that, you know, that it doesn't really get the kind of, you know, a lot of it, you know, they're definitely the, I think it's safe to say, and I don't know if you feel the same way, Jenny, since COVID, that might be the one sport that has been affected the most by it, you know, between what happened out there in the Santa Clara a few years ago with all the horses dying. And having you know, these races sort of in front of nobody and what have you, would you say that this is the one that is that it's affected horse racing as a whole the most? It was the one sport that the COVID and the aftermath has affected it the most.
Yes and no. On its face, it almost looks cut and dry,
mm-hmm.
but I assure you, once you start doing some digging, it's definitely more complicated than that.
Sure.
That mess at Santa Anita, there's something that's not quite right. It's not overly wrong, but it's not quite right either. It's enough to where I, like I said the other day, I wouldn't even put my Shetland pony on that track. And I'm not trying to be enough, but there's something off that I can't put my finger on.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, I'm better safe than sorry. That's always saved my butt in the end more times than I care to admit. You know, sometimes you see something and you say, you know what? No, we're going to leave that alone and go the other way and just sit back and watch what's happening. I haven't noticed anything really big about it this year, like it was a couple of years ago.
Right.
But, you know, then again, things, you know, with COVID, the way everything had everything screwed up, it's going to make it, you know, I'm wondering if that has something to do with not hearing quite as much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this week, well, actually, like, you know, the last 2 weeks, you know, when you think of what's going on, you basically have got all your major sports going on. You know, baseball's in its first month. NHL and NBA are in the playoffs. Football has the draft. Even the WNBA is starting this weekend as well. You've got the USFL. Compared to what it was, you know, 2 years ago at this time, it's busy. It's a busy time.
But everybody, and I'm hoping that it stays that way, you know, that nothing shoots back off like it was doing.
Sure.
Because I know a lot of owners don't, you know, most owners don't like losing animals if they can help it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, oh. and to piggyback on that Santa Anita thing, it sounds like just on the surface that it was so avoidable.
Yeah. Because you look at Japan's racing setup. They've got this mega track that is open 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And they don't have that level of accidents and death. So there's something that they're doing
or not doing
that we're not doing, or at least that's not being done at Santa Anita. Because no matter what, no matter how careful you are, you're going to have injuries. You're going to have breaks. There's just that's the nature of the beast.
It's the level. It's the level. It's the level of it more than anything.
You're still going to break down. It just
it's the level of it more than anything else.
Yeah, because it's the same way with human racing. You know, you'll be having the best race of your life. You blow out a hamstring right in the back stretch.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
857,
is that
Travis? Travis, is that you?
Mike, this is Orlando, brother. What's going on, family?
Hey, there you go. Okay, thank you, brother.
So there's, I just did a double take, a double look, and it looks like I've got the right list this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's looking like there's 1, 2, 3 AP Indy horses in.
Okay.
There's three of them. Charge It, Tis the Bomb, and Barbara Rose. Now, Pioneer of Medina is a Pioneer of the Nile colt. But that's coming out of the 16 gate. Tis the Bomb is coming out of the 15. And Barbara Road is coming out of the 17. Charge is coming out of the 9. Right in the middle of that sweep.
The first quarter of a mile dictates everything because whatever trip worked in getting you to a stalking position and off the rail, I think will work. Churchill Downs is a short track, but it's a track that has an advantage inside for sprints. If you're in the 1 or the 2 hole and you got speed, you can get on the rail and you can get out of there. But if you're somewhere where you can't utilize your speed, you're trapped. And it's a hellhole trying to get out of there, especially with 20 horses lined up.
Yeah. Now, epicenter is Stormcat Northern Dancer. On the sire line, Crypto Clearance and Northern Dancer on the dam side.
That's a powerful combination.
So, yeah, I can see why he's going off that way.
He's the favorite right now at 72.
And that's justified, definitely justified. That is a right call on that one. And then you've got Messier in the 3 slot, White Abaro, Abario in the 4, Modonegal in the 5. Ooh. It's going to make for an interesting running, that's for sure.
It's going to make for a good race. Do you have any questions for Jenny?
No, I do not have any questions. No questions for Jenny.
Okay. Modonegal, Mo is going off at 10. Ooh, and that sweet little spot, that little sweet spot from the 2 all the way up to looks like the 6. They're all going below 12 to 1.
Okay, Jenny.
And then everything else after that is hitting 20 to 1 all the way up to 30 to 1.
And you're going to put some big balloons up. You're going to put some big balloons up on the board if you hit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Bomb or Barbara Road could pull an upset. That would really pay big.
All right, so we're talking 3, 8, 9, 11, and 14. These are all APND.
Three, eight, nine.
11 and 14.
11 and 14.
Mm-hmm. So if y'all want to say you heard it here first, you go to the pay window, amen, y'all. Just make sure we get our cut.
Because, man, what I'm really... My favorite one, and I'm not going to lie because I'm a sucker for Secretariat, I will not lie on that one. I hope Charge It pulls it out. I really do. Because let me tell you, if he could pull it out, that would be another Secretariat Broodmare line that did it.
It really is.
That would really...
It really is class telling, isn't it? If a horse is good, a horse is good. And his kids are going to be good.
Yes.
And her kids are going to be good.
Yep. Especially on especially when Secretariat is the broodmare side.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it really starts to get interesting because that's justified.
That's right. Justified that was, on the broodmare side. Yes.
So it's definitely going to be interesting.
So... Given a fast track, everybody keep your eye on the center between post 3 and 10. I think that's where the action will be. If anybody comes from off the pace or from the outside post, they'll have to run at least a quarter mile just to get into position so it doesn't become a mile and 16. It becomes a mile and a half.
Okay.
A mile and, a quarter,
and there is a chance of rain for the – there is a chance of rain.
Uh-oh.
Hold on. Let's see. Because they were saying it was you know, small but not big.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. And there is only a 15% chance. Mm. It's going to be a cloudy day, chance of showers in the morning. And they're saying a high of 65, low of 56. With a 7% chance of rain at race time.
Yeah.
So it's a slight chance, but it's there.
Some horses do move up on a muddy track. Then I can't say they're bred for it, but it's just that the way they come out and the conditions they were exposed to gives them a bit more efficiency when the track is wet. They call mudders. Some are so good that they actually breed the horse with that in mind. If you're a horse like Conquistador Cielo or Deputy Minister, these were horses that ran well on wet tracks. Temperance Hill was another one. There's a whole bunch of these horses that specialize in that, and that's what bettors would use to move up their chances if the track is wet. But as of right now, the track is fast. And the guesses that we're making for you guys, that's what we see on a fast track. Does anybody have any more questions for Jenny?
I don't want to see another secretary. Are we ever going to see it again?
Truthfully, I doubt
it. No.
Not in our life.
No.
He was the only one to ever do that, and we've never come close since. Not even remotely close. And I mean, there was none that had ever done it before him either. He was, I think he's going to stand as the gold standard, as one of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'm not sorry for that. I don't feel bad about that. I mean, he was just one of those things, genetically, physically, he was one of a kind.
That's true.
And, you know, Jennery had it. She had on a damn coin toss. All on a coin toss, no less.
Jenny, wouldn't you say that one of the reasons that Secretariat would never happen again is that they've actually intermingled so many bloodlines with the original Secretariat?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, it all gets diluted down. It's very, very similar, but it does get diluted down because everybody when Secretariat Colts didn't win, everybody moved away at first until they figured out, whoa, okay, his Colts don't really produce speed, but his daughters as broodmares do. And then everybody flocked to grab a Secretariat broodmare to try to catch that flash in the pan again. And
yeah,
so,
Lady Secret is a good example. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, his grandson, you know, on down, like Justified,
mm-hmm.
produced. They and even though they weren't Triple Crown winners, except for him, they still ran well and were successful on the track and in the breeding shed. Look at Stormcat.
Yeah. He still commands $500,000 for a date.
Yeah. And that's less than 5 minutes. $500,000. It wouldn't even get 5 minutes.
That's some serious stud action right there.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's the kind folks like us don't even have the money to think about it.
Shoot. I'd say Stormcat's a porn star, but that'd be a whole other story.
Yeah, pretty much. That would definitely be a whole other horse of a different color.
Mm. Well, 3, 8, 9, 11, and 14, use those at your own peril. Jenny and I are going to go to the bank with that one, and hopefully we'll go to the pay window with that one.
Oh, fingers crossed.
Yes, indeed. Jenny, thank you as always, sweetheart.
Oh, same here, brother.
Okay.
You know I enjoy
love
it.
Hey, thank you for going Saturday. I appreciate it.
Oh, Mr. Gary, you're more than welcome. Talking horses is something I love to do.
There you go. Mm-mm-mm. Thank you, sweetie.
Well, Jennifer, you'll enjoy your night.
Yes, indeed. Jennifer Thibodeau Bort, our racing expert, put together some good numbers, hopefully, for us in the Kentucky Derby. Patrick Farrar is in the house as well. Patrick, can you hear me?
Live and living color. What's up, fellas?
All right. I want to bring up another situation that I think merits discussion tonight, and that is the Nets, the gutty gritty Nets. Now, Dr. J made the Nets a team. He helped make the Nets a champion. He also had Billy the Whopper Pulse, Super John Williamson, and he had enough talent for the Nets to walk into the NBA intact as a team and say, okay, let's get it on. However, or as we like to say sometimes, but the NBA did not let that happen. They would not let that happen. The merger or the addition of the teams commenced. Some teams got cut out the mix. The Nets were included, but Dr. J was not there. Tell me, everybody, and Tony, this is right in your backyard, so what do you think the Nets would have done if Dr. J, Super John, et cetera, were still intact when they came into the NBA?
But you forgot Dr. J. Larry Keenan.
That's right, Larry Keenan, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wants to lean him.
The Nets would have had even after all these years, and I don't know if you feel the same way, Patrick, the Nets are still trying to find their own identity. And now I know I may come off as arrogant saying that as a Knicks fan, but to me, it's sort of like the Mets in a sense where they've been sort of afraid of their own shadow at times. Now, the Mets, to a certain extent, they've established themselves. They've established their own identities and stuff over the years. But the Nets, it seems like the very first thing they had to do to get in the NBA was basically give up
everything.
Their most identifiable player. And it seems as like they've been playing catch up ever since then.
Well, Mike, if you go back and look at the Nets, all the teams that were brought forward, they had to give up something of their identity to actually be brought into the NBA. Because if you remember, back then, we're talking about in that era between 72 and 76.
That's right.
When they did play each other, the NBA took, to be nice about it, the NBA took some ass whippings. Even the good teams.
Yeah.
But the New Jersey Nets were the only ABA team had to pay the New York Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers. No other ABA team had to do that.
They pay them in a domain when they're both 90 miles away from each other.
Yeah. It seems as though, like I said, they've gone through like different eras and what have you, but they've always sort of just come up short at times. So when they were back to back Eastern Conference champions, there just so happened to be a dynasty in LA and a dynasty in San Antonio, and it was like, oh well, you're gonna be, you know, at the very least, you're going to be in second to this team. Now, of course, the Nets fans will say, well, at least they got there and the Knicks didn't. And that's true. That's very, very true.
Gentlemen, there's a thing called, that we know of, called the kiss of death. And the kiss of death. The kiss of death is when the former owner, Bo, and his group ran the money problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to a long history, but the short end of it, they ran into a bunch of money problems.
Yes, they did.
That they could have rectified, but they dealt with the immediacy, not the long term.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, the Nets were like that 72-70 76 area they talked about, and everyone thought that they had just built the former Brendan Vernon Arena, along with the Giants team. It was popular over there, even though, you know, it was a mess trying to get to on the highway. But once you got there, it was, you know, was right, you know, it was right next to each other.
Right.
They thought they were going to get off. Well, Bo and his people didn't think so, and they took the immediate money. And the rest is history, along with terrible front office management. And then in 1992, here I come in the front office, and Lord have mercy. That's all I can tell you. The year I got there, we won 17 games. And next year we won 26. And then they drafted Kenny Anderson and along with Derek Coleman, and things started to change. I really thought that was going to be
the face of that franchise for the next 10 years.
Yes.
And I don't know what the hell happened. But again, it's like like you said, that kiss of death. Just every time they would get to a certain level, they would take a step back.
What happens when you have a lot of junior executives making decisions? That's what happens.
There you go.
You know, they brought, you know, Willis Reed was a GM. Willis got him pretty well established. Also, when Drazen Petrovic died, that didn't help either.
Yeah,
that was the second kiss of death.
Yeah.
Because if Drazen would have been alive, but Drazen, Kenny, and Derek together, bruh, I've seen Jordan come in there and get his tail handed to him. Because Rodgers did not care about Jordan.
Petrovic was one of the few European players that actually had some balls and came in and played with legitimate game. He got better as he got in. He wasn't like Tony Kukoc and some of these other softies. No, Petrovic had it. He had heart.
Gentlemen, believe what I tell you. I was there. It was almost 8 years every game. I went there 8 years every game. Never missed a game. Petrovic was not scared of Jordan. Jordan, not the athletic ability or stuff, but game-wise, Petrovic ran off. And the team was ready to rock and roll. Then he died. Make a long story short, with Dr. J there, it really set the tone of the team having problems. And also, guys, from a marketing point of view, at that point it was hard to sell. Guys, you know, it ain't easy going to a company, you know, when you want the grand from, you know, come and see the Nets. And the guy used to say, "For what?" That's the truth. You know, I had a guy at the company I wanted to attach to in Jersey. And he said, "I will gladly buy four season tickets," which was about, you know, $20,000 with all the stuff we got. He said, "As soon as you get rid of Derek Coleman, we won't win." He says, "Well, we won't win." He said, "Well, I won't buy the tickets." I mean, I can write the check out right now. I mean, when you have to face stuff like that, that ain't easy to sell. And we weren't going to do it in the first place. Well, again, it just established a myriad of problems that they had. Now, it started to settle down a little bit when, unfortunately, when I left the team and Calipari came on and then some other stuff happened, you know. But Dr. J set the tone. That decision set that tone, really set the team back more than just on the court, but marketing-wise and decision-wise, because they didn't have people there come in. Of course, you know, they got executives on the team also. You see, when, you know, one thing you have to establish with these teams who do well, when they say it starts from the top, it does start from the top. If the team plays well, you get paid well, and everybody does well. It's reversed when that doesn't happen.
You know, and it's funny because, see, that was also, you know, that period of time in the NBA, it was around the time when the sports, when the numbers were starting to go down and what have you. And I'm sure that played somewhat into it. But yeah, it just seemed like you say, it just sounds like it was just so, you know, short-sighted.
It seemed as if the Nets had no identity at all, especially after Philly won the title in 83 with Doc, a vital part of the team with Moses, Tony, and all the others and stuff. You know, what did the Nets have? They really didn't have anything.
I was out in Ohio by the time. I didn't get up from Ohio until 85 to Jersey. And when I first went to the arena, just as a fan, you know, with some people going, I mean, folks were just itching for something to happen. I mean, there was that edge there. They could feel that, well, maybe this might – nothing was happening. And, again, when you have short-sighted executives who filed a line of business that wasn't conducive to really make things happen, you know. That's one thing about front offices, guys. If any kind of business – if you have these people with vision, you ain't going to ever succeed. So many people see the immediate, but you have to have vision. And then also, we had ownership that didn't have vision. We called the C Corporate 7. Oh, God. I'm crying on somebody. I mean, only like, we were locked into having our offices inside Brennan-Byrne Arena. And it was one guy who came in, who they, you know, brought in as a consultant to come in, and he was a consultant for like a year and a half, and then he made that decision. And once he made the decision, things changed. I think I told you about it. And well, I'll give a perfect example. the legacy of his thinking and progressiveness led to a guy to the present day that's one of the best coaches in the NBA. A guy named Spoelstra. It was his father, John Spoelstra.
Wow.
It was John Spoelstra, his father, who is one of the top marketing people in the NBA and the sports. Of course, is what he did to during those years of the Portland Trail Blazers. Well, he was behind the marketing of that team, and also he helped out several pro teams. I mean, whatever a team wanted to expand and think, they brought Spoelstra in. Well, the Nets brought Spoelstra in too. And I often tell people he's the most astute executive I've ever worked around with, because he didn't yell, he didn't holler, he didn't scream. He had a piece of paper in his hand, pulled it up, and went about doing things. But if you didn't produce, you were like James Brown, gone. He tested me, and I'm the only one in the sales department at the time. He wanted to break open and get open the. Of course, they signed me to Newark, New Jersey, my area. Plus, I went to other areas, but they wanted Newark to be signed to me because all the other white guys went in there. Where did they go? They didn't go anywhere. They afraid to walk in Newark. I'm going, ain't no big deal. But they won't show up. I opened up the Newark market to them exponentially. And when he had me going to. He wanted me to expand the marketing numbers of Newark, and I did. And I had one of a session with some Newark black executives, and he gave me $10,000 to give an event a lunch, $10,000 to do a lunch with some executives. He said, "I'm gonna give you a lunch, Patrick, but you know something? I want $25,000 back in terms of sales and business." I gave him $34,000. He said, "Okay, fine, you can keep going." I mean, now that's not a lot of money, but it's a lot of money when got people think that, you know. At one time, folks were giving Nets tickets away for free. Guys, you hear me? They were giving Nets tickets away, let alone to put money into them. Just that one day, $34,000. So with that in mind. Again, he had vision, and I told him lastly, he had the famous story I think I told you before. The Nets were inside the Brendan Byrne Arena, at that time now Continental Arena. That's where offices were cramped in there. He said, "This can't work. There's a building about less than a mile here. We have to convert everything to go over there." Well, make a long story short, he met the Seahawks in seven. Of a place called Mount. If you ever go in Jersey, Medieval Times, they right off Route.
Yeah, I remember that.
They have it's still there. But one of the restaurants was owned by one of the owners. They had a restaurant there. They met there, and at that meeting, he wanted to lay out what the final plan was. The plan was to move into this building, totally take two floors of the building, reconstruct it, give everybody, offices, and assigned phones. I mean, just totally change it. Some of the nuances that folks do now, that was ahead of its time 20-some years ago. So he said, "Hey, we're going to lay it out." They went to the meeting. So at the meeting, they were talking about it, and guys were, were the owners, and they were confused about numbers. Some guys were bugging at numbers. He said, "Excuse me, I'll be right back." All right, mm-hmm. So he walked out, and we about it, was going to the bathroom. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 25 minutes. What the hell, where is he at? They go to the bathroom, he's not there. So they said, what's going on? So guys walk out, where is he at? So they look outside, the limousine that they got him, it was gone. The guy called him. Where the hell are you at? He says, "Well, I'm on the way to the airport, to Newark Airport." "What the hell? We got a meeting going on here." He said, "If you can't pass this deal, I might as well go back to Portland." Well, come on back. The reason why John could do that was John has something that we all wish we had. yeah, fuck you, money. If you don't like what I do, fuck you, I'm out of here. And that's how the Nets began to change. The team went from 96 million to 268 million in a matter of 2 years, just like that. So again, like I said, with people with vision, people have things more than just the ordinary, and that applies to any business. If you don't have vision, particularly when it comes to big money, you're going to fail. And again, it follows the trails of being the kiss of death. When they had everything in their hand with Dr. J, and eventually down the road with Drazen, it didn't work.
Patrick, what vestiges of Dr. J were there by the time you had arrived at the Nets?
It was damage control, man. It was still damage control because when I got there, the team was not in disarray, but again, they won 17 games.
Mm-hmm.
82 games, you won 17. I mean, if you had 6,000 people in the arena, you were doing good, and that's because out of 6,000, 7,000 people in the arena, five wanted to come and see the TV we were playing. Only time you got was maybe 15,000, which wasn't really in the it fit 20,000 when the Knicks came in town. You know, so folks who couldn't see the Knicks in Garden came to see New Jersey for half price. You know, it was that kind of situation, man.
Amazing. You know, Tony, I know you're a big ABA fan for years, but you know the fact that the Nets had to give their name, literally in their heart, had to give it away in order for them to get in. I mean, if you look at the other teams that were there, you could have made a case that maybe the Kentucky Colonels could have been in. They won a championship. They had a decent team. You know, why did they cut it off at four?
You want to let them know, Tony? I tell you what. Remember, without going to a litany, diatribe, what it is, I can give you a quick story. Remember the picture that was the basketball picture done by, what's that comedian, white comedian? Oh, God. It was about basketball, how they made it. What's the name of that basketball movie? God, the situation what you just told was based upon this movie.
Oh, you mean the one with Will Ferrell in it?
Yeah.
Okay, I know which one you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that movie, the decision on how things were moved was based on the reality how the Nets got in. All right, make a long story short, the Nets got in because of the fact that it was in New York. And the fact they figured New York was big enough, make it real simple, New York was a big enough market to handle, and it could handle it. But, you know, Roy Bowen, you know, those guys, they said, forget that. Who takes the money? And that's what happened. I will tell you this. Here's what happened. One of the owners, he's still in Jersey. I think he's still alive. I'm pretty sure he's still alive. He made a fabulous deal. The deal was to buy the team, in order to get the team, he kept 1% of the team in perpetuity to this day.
Huh.
Now, he made his main business was, guess what? His main business is in another business in perpetuity. He has the contract to make buttons and zippers for the entire U.S. Army, Navy, and Marines.
Holy shit.
Now, so you know he had money. But the trick he had with money, in order to sell, buy one of his portions, that he took the 1% as a buyout, as a minority owner. He said, okay, I'll leave. So if the team grows, you grow. Every year the team grows. He makes about $40, $50 million a year for doing nothing. That's part of that deal to get the Nets. Okay, it's probably more than that now. It was about $40 million when I was there, not 20 some odd years ago. So he must be like $100 million, $120 million every year. And that's the deal he made to sell the team. So with those kind of deals in mind, you know that things didn't go well.
That's insane. That's insane money to have that kind of stuff.
Oh,
man, you got just imagine you and that, your family gets rich. Where the money for the NBA is now. Just look at this way. The Golden State Warriors were worth about $450 million.
Mm-hmm.
Golden State Warriors now hit the team to buy the Golden State Warriors now. Warriors now it costs you $6 billion.
Damn.
Come on, man.
And when they
moved it, that new arena is over, man. Yeah, yeah. And guess what, Gary? Guess how much public money was in that money? Not a dime.
Yep.
That's all private money. Hey,
the lowest ticket for
$180
is the lowest ticket for a game.
And on top of that, because of the fact that they paid for themselves. I mean, only government the money got was to build roads, infrastructure, which had to lead into the arena. But imagine, you get that much money, you can write that money off tax-wise forever.
Yep.
Yo. I just feel that Dr. J having to leave,
mm-hmm,
cut their nose and spite their face. Why didn't they just suggest that the Nets had a legit star and just let them in? I mean, it felt like blood money that they had to give Dr. J to the 76ers rather than just have him come in. It didn't feel like a trade to me as much as it was highway robbery. And I'm a Sixers fan.
I grew up a Sixers fan. I grew up one. More than Knicks, I grew up a Sixers fan. And I understand. Mm-hmm. But again, Mike, it's real simple. Short sideness and I want the money right now.
Yep.
That's what happened, man. And without going through a litany of other things, I can say short-sightedness. Let's take the money. And the fan base is ready to spend. There are people around here. I was so we had and reason I know it was so well. Even though I was missing when they got there, I was in Ohio. I talked to a guy about litany things because they wanted him to be the face of the organization, and for a while he was because he's from this area. A guy named Michael Corrin.
Yeah.
And Mike is from Jersey, and I know Mike real well. Mike told me some stuff. I'm going, what?
Man, please.
They call, and guys out in Ohio warned me out. There's an article on the front page of the USA Today, and I went to the gym to go work out one day, play some balls, and guys said, Patrick, I was a football player too. So one's my boy, God rest his soul. Todd Bell, who played with the Philadelphia Eagles for a while.
Yeah.
Oh,
Todd, who was a tremendous athlete. He broke Jesse Owens records in high school run. Anyway,
Todd Bell
was
well.
I missed him. He had a heart attack on the highway and passed. But me and Todd were close. And Todd, I came to play ball. And Todd, Patrick, I saw the New Jersey Nets. Man, he said, "Who's this guy, Mr. Average?" They made a whole article in the sports page of the USA Today about Mr. Average, and they had Michael Corrin at that point. And they dug me forever. Now, Mike could play now. Mike could play, but they had Mike the face of the organization with the Nets. I'm going, Mike is a good player, but he ain't the face of the. That's the kind of marketing steps those guys at the time were thinking were doing.
That's crazy.
Hey. Well, you know, let's put it this way. The Knicks ain't that much better. But the Knicks have the benefit of being where? In the middle of Manhattan.
That's And the sad thing is that was the hook for the longest time. And the, you know, they went through that era. they went through that era like the Yankees, where they were selling you they were selling you the nostalgia.
Yeah, they still are.
And they're still selling nostalgia. They're still selling Willis Reed from 1970. They still are.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Trust me.
Like I'm saying, gentlemen, look at James Dolan. Is he a progressive guy? Is he an innovative leader? Hell
no. No. If being a professional pig is innovating, then you know there you go.
And Mike, look what the Sixers did for years. I mean, after Dr. James and that crew left, I mean, some of the ineptitude of individuals who are supposed to have a long life understanding of marketing and structure in business, some guys don't get it.
That's
and
true.
It can last
that was a lot of money
of
to get that one championship. It was.
That's right. I thought you had two or three championships in Sixers.
Yeah, they should have. They weren't lying when they said we owe you one. We owed you three.
I actually thought it was about four or five, but yeah, we'll be
like, Radio Reggie's in the mix. Reggie, what you got to say?
Hey, I'm down here in Orlando, Florida, and I can tell you, man, the craziness with the cops shooting young black people is just as bad as it is in New York, Buffalo, whatever. They had a 20-year-old. That's what it was. What's up, Patrick? The thing that pissed me off is that they had a sheriff that shot and killed a 20-year-old in front of Target, used deadly force, but yet they could not figure out why they used the force to shoot. Then they had a 14-year-old fall off an amusement ride, and the parents were like, what do you mean? What do you mean that he wasn't fencing in properly? You know, and he's from St. Louis. I mean, and then they got another crazy situation where a 16-year-old got gunned down. I'm like, damn, I leave Virginia. It's like I'm back in Virginia, you know, with the craziness going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, guys, I got to say one thing real quick. It's amazing to me, the NFL draft, and Patrick, help me with this. It's like we don't mind the HBCUs being target practice because that's our new sweatshop. I mean, I was glad a young man from Fayetteville State got drafted. But then when I see all the young men, I don't know if you got the list I sent, Patrick, these young men who have free agent contracts, I'm like, how in the hell you have about 20 or 30 free agent contracts, but nobody got fucking drafted? And when these small schools like Belichick and them, this guard and then this quarterback nobody fucking heard of, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. No respect for the HBCUs. Help me out, Patrick.
Okay, why? What, you know, in Facebook, you know, when they put down, four HBCUs players got drafted, and what did I say?
Mm-hmm.
Ain't enough. If it had been
Thank
24
you.
Drafted, it would have been, okay, that's a step in the right direction. But four,
yep.
here's what it all boils down to when they select these players. It ain't the players so much. It's the idea of the structure of how they're selected. And know where it comes from? Does he know if let's say a player is from FAMU, who's a good ball player, defensive back, if once these guys test him, and that's the problem, the analytical approach now more than ever in testing ball players, once they decide he can, you know, get past that, if you go into a camp, these guys from the major schools, the Big Ten and whatnot, these guys, half those guys have coaches that are connected with the head coach. His drills, his practices, his systems, they already know him. So they're already 6, 8, 10 steps ahead of the game. So by the time the guy's an HBCU school, who could be just as good, but he ain't got enough time to show his stuff because in amount of time, you got to get through training camp, and not only 3 exhibition games for the coming up, he ain't got time to show his stuff.
And it's even less time now than it was back in the day. You know, it's ridiculous. And see, it's always funny because see, when McNair was drafted number 3 overall, first thing out of everybody's mouth is, well, he's going to have to relearn everything he learned at Al Alcorn. Now, think about that. The day that Steve McNair played his last game at Alcorn, he was the leading quarterback in all of college football. You know, more yards, more percentage. But they're going to tell you that now they're going to tell you, oh, he's got to relearn all of what he learned. Well, then why the hell are you drafting him at number three then if you don't think that he's worthy? Meanwhile, they forced Carson Wentz and that other Jamoke down our throats, and both of them are still struggling.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Tony, what just happened to the young boy from Liberty? He dropped the third round.
It was like they were begging Tennessee to take him because, yes, I was really annoyed with that shit. As they were talking about him, it was like Richard Sherman texting and says, how can you take this brother? And it was like, yeah, how come? You know, why would you have to wait for a pro to say so when you're sitting there jerking everybody off on the air talking about what quarterbacks are and aren't available?
Yeah, and Mike, one of the first things you just said, one of the first things that was wrong, they were waiting for ESPN. Anything to do with ESPN when it comes to small colleges, especially, you know, and see, again, everybody thinks that it's about the size of the college. It ain't got nothing to do with it. Fable State is as big as Wake Forest. Okay, take away all those graduate pro and doctoral programs at Duke University, Fable State, Winston-Salem State, and especially A&T and Central are as big, if not bigger, than Duke. Okay, and so we have a public that think it's all about size. Size ain't got nothing to do with it. It's how much money are you willing to raise? How much money are you willing to spend on athletics? Okay?
Yes.
Right now, we got this situation where this HBCU is talking about going to being the third HBCU in the CAA. Well, if you can't raise money in the NEAC or you're not willing to raise money in the NEAC and then take that money and spend it, or correction, invested in your athletic program, they might as well have stayed in the CIAA or go to below that, which is a Division III, because it ain't going to help you none. Them schools, the white man's water still freezes at 32 degrees minus 1 point, okay?
Yeah, I promise.
It's total nonsense, I love Dr. Martin and all that kind of stuff, but now he's showing what kind of an Aggie he really is. Dr. the guy that used to be at Hampton did the same thing because he turned his back on a conference, an HBCU conference, to go to a quote unquote more financially set conference. Come to find out, the white, why would as the guy on the Titanic said, why would I jump back on the boat when all the white folks jumping off, okay? That's what you got here. And the truly sad thing is we think their water is wetter than ours, and it ain't. I think the school was called Robert Morris. But, I'm glad that school did not come to, I think that was the one. I'm glad that school did not come to A&T with their drum and bugle corps, with the guys wearing kilts and playing bagpipes. Can you imagine how them guys would have been laughed at A&T, and then the blue and gold come out after they do.
Mm-hmm.
And culturally, you know, I got a young lady now who finally sold her mother and her dad, who are from the Midwest and who don't really know about HBCUs, but they're stationed here at Bragg. And we did some talking to them. She was going to go to all these different schools, and I know you can get, you know, engineering, math, science, you name it, English is a senior in any school you go to. There is nothing a teacher at Ohio State, Notre Dame, and all them other places can teach you about those things because it's, I mean, they use, we use their books to teach their subjects. So take the book and go somewhere else, you know, that's makes, it's going to make you feel like a human being. Had him, she met my nephew, and he went to AAT. Fortunately, she was smarter than him, so she's going to Winston-Salem State. But, you know, those are the kind of mistakes that we keep making. And when it comes to football players, Reggie was right. If a guy is good enough to be a undrafted, you can say he probably was good enough to be drafted. And then you can also say this. Go back and look at all the guys who've been enshrined in the Hall of Fame in the last 30 years. Look at how many of those guys came from small schools. I'm not bragging about the Steelers, but look, half the guys that from the Steelers have gone into the Hall of Fame and some of the ones who should be in the Hall of Fame are from HBCUs or small schools. I don't, you know. He went to North Texas State, which was a Division II school. Correction, Division II / NAIA school back then. Okay.
Yeah.
L.C. Greenwood went to Arkansas A&M at the time.
A&M.
Division
II
/ NAIA school.
We don't even have to make the argument. Listen, I hate the Dallas Cowboys, but Everson Walls belongs in the Hall of Fame. And he was a Dallas Cowboy in addition to being a New York Giant and an HBCU player out of Grambling.
So,
you know, they know damn well exactly what they're doing.
He should have made it from either one of the teams he played for. Well, the same thing with L.C. Greenwood. You know, his numbers are not that different from Mean Joe Green. If you go back and listen to Mean Joe Green talk about how L.C. Greenwood made it so he could do all of that stuff that he did. All that glitz and then something said about Lawrence Taylor, if Banks and those guys hadn't covered his ass, he would have been just another out of control Negro who probably would not have stayed in the NFL two to five years because they covered his behind at all times, and that was their business because he, you know, he was stoned half the time, so he didn't know what he was fixing to do. So how they gonna know?
And Fred, your points are on point, and the issue is, like I said, the kid from Liberty was getting the same kind of comments in terms of structure. The reason he got drafted in the third round. There's a young man I was talking about before. I didn't know his name. Akil Glass from A&M, Alabama A&M. You know
Alabama
A&M. They were buzzed that he was going to get drafted. I'm going, what? And he's 6'5", 240. What? And you're gonna bring somebody from Tokyo U, because he knows a coach who's on the Los Angeles Rams to somebody from the Washington Redskins to bring him in because he knows the system. What?
Yep.
So there it is, right there.
They played golf together.
There you go. There you go.
They shared a Ritz cracker together. They shared a Ritz cracker together somewhere, and that's their relationship.
Oh shit.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I mean, it happens every year. So you know, like I said before, this, like Greg was saying, they drafted four players HBCU, and
Yeah. It does happen every year, but this year was the first time where I actually felt like they were begging Tennessee, please take this Negro. You know, it wasn't like they were trying to say the luck of the draw was not there or somebody missed out. He was there. He was waiting. There were four other clubs who could have taken the guy, and they were like, Tennessee, please take him. Tannehill ain't shit. Please take him. We're going to look really bad, especially after the black coach thing. Take him now, please. And that's exactly what happened.
And that's it. The Panthers should have took him quickly. I mean, come on, don't get me started.
The Panthers are so bad that they were supposed to be moving their operation to South Carolina. South Carolina decided they didn't want them. So now we are asking. See, now they're the North Carolina Panthers instead of the Carolina Panthers.
That's bad.
No, that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And on the subject of race and coaches and players, you all don't get to see or didn't get to see the end of the season for the Panthers, and then going into the prep for the draft and whatnot. That man, that's their coach, whatever his name is, he is so clueless. And unfortunately, the owners are just as clueless.
There you go.
As I said earlier, I can't figure how this man made $1 million, because he must have been real good at something. But he ain't good at football. He is not, his saving grace for football is he has this policy where he basically supports when a player, whatever a player is doing in the public, to some degree he's going to go out in the community. And, the Panthers has a guy that's his job to make sure that he is supporting whatever his players are doing in the community. But beyond that, I mean, he can't even look in the camera when he's talking. That's how pissed off this guy is. And I don't know how he made $1 million. It ain't right.
Fred, you said what I said. It starts from the top.
I think that's a nice way of closing out, guys. It starts from the top. We see where it goes from there. If it runs downhill, that's not a good thing. If it carries on and maintains, maybe that's the difference between what a great franchise and a poor one is. We'll set up with final thoughts. Patrick, set us off.
Well, one of the things that I looked at in terms of from my front office, I got a lot of stuff I can say about that, but. Yeah, I'm saving that for another day. I looked at what's his name? My man, one of my favorite players to this very day. A guy getting credit, and they're finally recognizing him. Dusty Baker got his 2000 wins. We'll get his 2000 wins. They're automatically saying that he's going to go in the Hall of Fame as a player and a manager, and what he's done, he should go in. Hopefully, there's going to be some sports writers, as we know, who are going to find a reason that he didn't give him the right interview when he asked him, or he let him use his bathroom, when he had to go. They'll find some reason to hold him back. But Dusty has reached that plateau where when he finishes, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
All right.
Here.
Professor?
Well, since we're on the draft, let me start by congratulating a young man I've known since his mom and dad first started dating and so forth and so on. Matthew Butler, who played at University of Tennessee. He was he got drafted by the Oakland Raiders. I'm telling you, I pray for you because now I always loved him, but now I got to hate him because I mean he's a Raider. But he, you know, so we have watched him grow up, and you know here he is, 22 years of age, and you know he did well at in spite of a lot of craziness that went on at Tennessee at University of Tennessee. Also, Coach Kim, who's taken over as the head women's basketball coach at Mississippi Valley. Congratulations, she was hired. She was at Lamont Owings, and now she's going to Division One. But the, you know, just as an aside, she actually played for Nelson Brownlee at the Clapham University, which was Clapham College at the time, and she actually helped take two of his teams to the Final Four of the NAIA National Championship. You know, it's getting funner and funner dealing with some of this stuff that relating to the history of HBCUs and whatnot. But you know, the more we're still in that mode where the more we tell our story, and we have to tell it because nobody knows it like we know. But the more we tell our story, people will begin. I'm sure people will begin to recognize because you know, we were talking about the Nets before, but and some of the other teams, it's long overdue that these guys and girls get recognized. Unfortunately, the young lady out of Jackson State got cut today. It's very likely she will be picked up by another team. Because for those who don't know, Jackson State 2 years, but she came, I think, from the University of Mississippi. Because she was at a Division One school, a Power Five school before she went to Jackson State. She fell in love and had a child, and then her husband and so forth talked to her and some other friends, talked to him going back to school, and she ended up at a good place at Jackson State. You can follow me on Facebook as well as you can contact me at www.blackheritage.com.
Fred, one quick question. Do you know anything about the North Carolina A&T track team and how they're doing this year?
They've been doing good.
The reason why I'm asking, one of the girls that here in Jersey City just broke the established the longest field record in the high jump in Penn State Penn Relays history, and she's from Jersey City, and Rutgers won them, but A&T is after her also. So I just want to see how it's going to go. That's
the guys have continued as usual, of course, and the girls are doing well too because see they had they had their own class of teams, and they ran real proud of a lot of bigger schools.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to see if Herding, you know, how they're doing because I know that someone in the system asked me about it. I said, well, A&T got some runners. And plus, they got at least four or five guys around who ran at St. Augustine. A lot of guys are pushing to give not a chance to consider, seriously consider A&T. So I just wish how they're doing. That's all. I've been asking.
Yeah. The thing that I try to get across to people, first of all, if you – you know, it's a good culture, but you know, if you're going into anything related to digital engineering, mathematics, that kind of stuff, they're don't say I'm being crass, but that they're very good in those areas.
I'm not surprised at all. That's all.
Gary. Good, Ryan Reed.
Oh, shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I got to do these lightning. One is the great history of see Vivian Stringer?
Yes. Yes, yes.
Sister Stringer. It was 1,050 games.
Yes, LeBron.
Say it, LeBron. Something I never thought I would ever do on this show.
That's scary.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about the New York football Jets.
Oh,
yes,
oh,
you should.
Oh,
can it really be, in my best Batman's announcer voice, can it be that the New York Jets actually want to be a football team?
Yes. You ain't wrong, Tony. You ain't wrong.
You know, I mean, other than that other green team up the road there, they may have had probably one of the better drafts. And the thing about it is it looks like that they're trying now. Now again, I am not putting them in the playoffs, let alone Super Bowl or what have you. But as we invoke the Butt Sisters for the millionth time in a long time. There may actually be a light at the end of the tunnel, and not Matt Robinson and Richard Todd holding the flashlight. So, again, now the way that division is this year, I mean, it's basically still Buffalo Blues, and you know Miami. Oh, there, we'll see where they go there, and the hell with the team in Foxborough. I don't care what happens. Another 2 hours in. But you know, could it actually be that the Jets may actually start looking like a real football team?
What the hell's next?
I know the Meek are going to inherit the earth, but my goodness.
Tony, they're first five picks. nobody was betting this year's draft.
Really? Really? I mean, they, you know, they basically, you know, look, they're a little, they're probably a little bit more defensive because of their coach, but, you know, they've got some, you know, some building blocks or what have you.
Do you know who is still in that draft if things work out? Of course, you know, the kid who's there, the boy Garrett Wilson is the truth.
Oh,
and
man.
Imagine
if Mr. Wilson can get the ball to him on a consistent basis.
And sauce is good over some meat. But this kid, Bryce Hall, the kid from Iowa State, that kid, if used properly, Lord, have mercy.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how things play out. Because look, there's just I think the thing that's happened with the Jets over the years is that, you know, I know they had the creative music a few years back when they signed the Fireman and Ronnie Lott and the people who basically they were at the back of their baseball cards saying, ooh, I like this. But now they're really actually trying to build from scratch, have a little patience with their, with their alcohol intoxicated fans, and who knows?
Tony, the classic case. We remember one of just for all these years. Get the junior executives out the way and the marketing people, and they might have a team.
Yeah. You have Blue Hope, as long as you don't have Blue Hope trying to make a team strong, things will be happening.
I know my Eagles had a decent draft, but I felt the Jets had a better one. I frankly think
Eagles had
we had the best draft out of all of them, and I think with such effort, they should be knighted.
Give him credit. I've got to give him credit. The first five.
Presenting His Most Royal Majesty, the King.
Your Majesty.
Sheriff of Nottingham, in gratitude for your faithful service, I shall knight thee.
Your most gracious Majesty.
In the name of my most royal Majesty, I knight thee. Arise, sirloin of beef. Arise, Earl of Cloves. Arise, Duke of Brittingham. Arise, Baron of Munchausen. Arise, essence of myrrh, of magnesia, quarter of ten.
You are too kind, Your Majesty.
Got lots of stamina.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down.
Let's hope the Jets don't fall like that. See you later.